Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW Studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Andrew Becker, a Los Angeles-based musician and filmmaker who records under the name Human Potential. His latest release under the Human Potential moniker is Eel Sparkles, which is out now. Populated by unlikely hooks and contrasts between light and dark, the album demonstrates the wide reach of Becker's talents. We discuss the current album, his love of the band XTC, and the connection between filmmaking and composing music. All that and more on this episode of Into Music, coming up now.
This is the best album bio I think I've ever read.
Thank you. I take great pride in that. Thank you very much. That is, I just cannot. It is, my whole thing is sort of to make the anti-bio, because I'm left to do this. I have to do it. I have to write it. So like, I don't find anything about myself like inherently interesting. So like, my job is to make it palatable so that I can read it. Because otherwise it's just like, what, like, I don't particularly like talking about myself that much. And I just, you know, just being involved like in music for the past 20 years, just reading so many of these stupid bios of bands put out. And it's so like, it can be so self-serious. And I think it's just so, so fucking silly. And I just, it's nauseating. I find it so odd how people talk about themselves sometimes. So I try to make it funny for me. Most importantly, it's like, all right, like if I can live with this, then hopefully other people can. I really like, do you know the band Wolf Eyes? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, I really like their music, but I sort of like their ethos, which is like, they don't take themselves very seriously, I feel like, but they take their music very seriously. And that's something that I really admire and something an aesthetic I try to achieve with this project.
At the end of the day, most of us or a lot of people aren't going to care like that it was recorded in the basement of an Airbnb in Vermont and under a full moon.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, because another gripe I've had in the past is that I've found that you send out a press release or something and with the bio included, and many writers will just regurgitate what they see. So it was almost like partially a trick to see if I could just get people to be like, oh, this is how he made the record. It's like, if you really believe that, like, okay, cool. Like, so it was partially like a trick for like journalists to actually like try to absorb the music and write something analytical, which, you know, sometimes doesn't happen and people just regurgitate whatever. So yeah, that was also part of the goal, was to have people realize that it was ridiculous and be like, okay, well, I guess I have to listen to the music, because ultimately that's what it's about.
Well, and at some point we all form our own relationship with music, so that stuff just, sometimes it's interesting, but it becomes irrelevant to us when we're putting the record on the turntable.
100%. And that's not to say that there can't be great stories behind records. There obviously are, but I'm not like Ioannis Xenakis. I wasn't involved in like a counter-revolutionary group and got shot 5 times and like, you know, created some mathematical model to compose. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just here in my house, like writing music. Not to say there won't be like, you know, a story somewhere down the road that totally inspires a record or something, but right now that's not necessarily the case. And I'm just like, what? It's just like, yeah, it's just music. Hopefully people like it, but I feel like I don't have to steer the conversation to try to influence them. It should just be listening to it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. So there is something I wondered about in the process of making the music, whether it's in the compositional process or recording. Listening to this, I wondered if sometimes your compositions are a process of subtraction, because I hear things where it's like, that sounds like, and I mean this in the best possible way, like there was something there and then you took away to emphasize something else.
Yeah, I mean, I should probably take that advice more often, to be honest, because, you know, the music tends to skew ridiculously maximalist. And that's just how, I don't know why. It's just, I sort of have this tendency to want to fill up space all the time. And I have to rein myself in, which is really hard to do. It starts usually by just composing. I'll do guitar or synth, you know, something I can write a melody on for the most part, usually, or bass guitar recently. Or actually, I've been like sort of fiddling with manipulating samples in like my in Logic and time stretching them and pitch shifting. And then I'll start with sort of a chordal concept that I created from another piece of music. And that'll sort of, you know, take me in a different direction. But yeah, and then I'll sort of build it out and then like add all this stuff. And then usually I realize I don't need 93 tracks on this song or, you know, something absurd. So there is certainly like a subtractive element to it. And something I've tried to do in the probably the past couple records, try to not make it so dense, because some of my favorite music, like Caliphone, is like one of my favorite bands in the entire world. And there's so much space in that music, and it's so beautiful. And the songwriting's great. And I don't know, like there's so many cool textures that are allowed to breathe in those songs that I really admire. So that's something I've sort of tried to direct myself towards a little bit.
There is something too about, and as much as I always want to try to avoid comparisons, but the first and the last song on the album, songs, to me had just a hint of like an XTC influence.
Yes.
Especially in the sense of the way that light and dark are kind of contrasted.
Yeah. I mean, XTC, yeah, one of my favorite bands ever. Andy Partridge is one of my favorite songwriters. I mean, I just don't understand, you know, it's like, I think he's sort of like almost on like a Paul McCartney level with the way he composes vocal melodies. And XTC, I find so interesting because it's so goddamn catchy. The songs are so great, but they have this way of writing songs that in which the verses, in some cases, not all cases, but the verses tend to be, are almost like the choruses, and the choruses are almost the verses. So like the verses are really super catchy, right? And then like the choruses, maybe will come down a little bit, but it's like almost this like inversion of like a pop song format in a way. I mean, yeah, I mean, I've studied XTC songs quite a bit, and I'm not surprised that bleeds through. And that, I mean, Jesus, yeah, like if there's any patina of XTC in my music, I take that as an incredible honor. Yeah, I adore that band. And I mean, I know on one song I ended up I totally just stole an XTC riff that I didn't realize until like months later, which wasn't surprising at all. And I also like the fact, because, you know, I don't think he's Andy Partridge. I think he's a great guitar player, but he's like not trained really. He doesn't really, like, I watched an interview with him once, and it was an interview with it might have been like a music professor or something like that. And Andy Partridge was showing him how to play, you know, some of the songs. He's like, yeah, and then I did this. And he's like, and the professor's like, well, that's, you know, an A7 over whatever. And he's just like, I don't, if you say so, it's like, I don't really know. It sounded cool, you know, which I just love that's, you know, because that's how I had no idea what I'm doing. And I just make it up as I go along, you know. So it's nice to see that other people do that too.
Yeah, I think he has that thing where it's like you have kind of the standard chord, and then what happens if you move, you know, like the top note around a little bit? Oh, I haven't heard that before. And now, how can we play that in a context where it doesn't sound dissonant, but it's totally dissonant, you know?
But also, but in the framework of this like beautiful pop song, which is like that's why those songs are so interesting, because he's playing these occasionally like weird dissonant things, but it works so well, just the contrast with like the more saccharine parts of the song, you know, which I just love it so much.
So you started out as a drummer. What led you to like other instruments, like I guess what we traditionally call melodic instruments? Although you know, for me, that's
Well, yeah, I mean, there's tuned percussion and stuff, right? Yeah, so I basically started playing drums when I was like 4, and I played throughout my childhood, you know, throughout high school and college, and then when I moved to DC, I joined or was part of this band called Medications, and I was a drummer there, and we did a lot of tours, and I was with them for like 5 years, something like that. And then when I moved to Brooklyn, I was in a band called Screens, who I also played drums for. And that band sort of like unceremoniously exploded in like, I don't know, I'd say 2011 or 12. I guess at that point I was in my early 30s and I'd been in bands, and I don't know, I just wasn't really interested in that dynamic anymore for the time being. And I had never played another instrument ever in my life, but I had this an ex-girlfriend of mine had bought me, I think for Christmas, sort of like a cheap nylon string guitar, which I would, you know, I fiddled around with it, but I didn't really know what I was doing. So after Screen's demise, I didn't want to join a band, but not playing music didn't seem to be an option. So I was like, well, I wonder if I can just like write a song. So I just got this guitar and I started like, I had like a contact mic that I just like scotch taped to it and then ran it through like a couple pedals, and that's how I started recording my first songs. I have a couple really good friends who, because I was in New York at the time, and their family has a house in upstate New York about 3 or 4 hours outside the city, that would be basically like vacant for months on end. So they would let me go up there by myself and just sort of like set up a little studio and mess around and record demos and stuff. So that's sort of how it started. And, you know, I wrote the first song up there, which was, I think, the first song on my first record. And I was like, oh, I guess I can do this. Like, I guess I can make a song. It's like, well, I guess now I have to try to sing over it, which was horrifying because I'd never sang before, but I did it, and you know, for better or worse. And then yeah, I just sort of evolved from there, and I just got more interested in playing guitar, less interested in playing drums, and yeah, I don't know, just sort of spawned this sickness where I just sort of have to I just feel like this compulsion to write songs.
Are you just in general like a writer? Like, I mean, was writing itself, you know, just prose even something that was attractive?
Yeah, I mean that, you know, it's also, I mean, that's something I sort of have done for a day job as well. Like, I mean, you know, more like directing and producing, but like story producing for like TV and documentaries, which is essentially writing. So it's, you know, it's basically structuring out a story. So it's like, it's not dissimilar to writing a song. You got sort of have to hit all the same beats. You have to create tension, and you have to create emotional peaks and valleys and things like that. So yeah, it's sort of been something that I've been doing for a long time. Yeah, I don't know why. It's just like, it's just in there and has to come out somehow, you know?
Yeah. Well, that because it just occurred to me, you know, that you know, making a film and writing a song, yeah, it's that it's at the end of the day, it's composition. So
Yeah, and editing, I think that's a huge thing. If I've learned anything from either medium, is like editing is the most important. How can you make this And everything doesn't have to be edited, but how can you make this succinct? How can you get your point across in the best way, in a succinct way that doesn't, how can I make this not boring? So it's intriguing, but also sort of giving the listener, the viewer, what they expect in an unexpected way, I guess.
And that's funny too, because I've heard these conversations about actors, for instance, who have taken on scripts and they said, "Oh, it was a good movie on the page, but it was edited wrong."
Sure. I mean, especially for film, yeah, for films, it's like, man, it's and I edit too, and I genuinely love editing films and TV stuff, and it's just fun. It's just you. It's not unlike making a song. It's got to be rhythmic. It's got to be rhythmic. You have to have an innate sense of rhythm if you're going to be a good editor. You just have to, because you're working with music too, and not only music. With the dialogue, there has to be a rhythm to the dialogue and the pacing of the scene and comedic timing and all this stuff. And it's the same thing with writing a song. It's like, oh, well, this part has to crescendo at the right moment there. And then it's like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's all sort of the same thing.
So you have this body of work that you've created essentially on your own as a solo artist. When you finish a record like this one, are you kind of going, I know what the next one's going to be?
It's funny you say that, because I have about 13 new songs that I'm basically in late stage demo. It's in sort of the late stages of the demo right now. So I'm hoping by the end of this year that'll be done. But yeah, I don't really sit around and think about it. I'm sort of just always moving on to the next thing. Also because it takes album's done and you mix it and then you have to get it mastered, and then like if you're doing like a press campaign or whatever, all this stuff takes so long, so you could be a year removed from that record. Yeah, I just kind of want to get on to the next thing and keep going.
You've been listening to a conversation with Andrew Becker of Human Potential. The latest Human Potential LP is Eel Sparkles, and it's out now. You can learn more about Human Potential and Andrew Becker at whatdelicate.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.